Day Tourist.
Welcome to the Game Day Tourist podcast. I am your host, Mark Lawson, and this is episode 19, Kabaddi with Dan Strange and Suhail Chanduk of In and Out Kabaddi podcast. Suhail, Dan, welcome to the Game Day Tourist podcast, and thank you for coming on to talk about Kabaddi today. But before we get into that, would you mind just introducing yourself to the listeners, please? And Suhail, we'll start with you.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. And it's always nice to go back to Kabaddi. I think Dan and I have enjoyed sort of talking about this in the past as well. But just to give all our listeners a bit of a brief intro, I guess, for me, I was a former sportsman, former cricketer, playing in the UK, Australia, and then back in India, of course, chasing the IPL dream. Sadly, that went kaput when my knee went kaput. Then transitioned into sports broadcasting as a presenter and commentator back in 2014. And been with Star Sports in India since then, covering the IPL, Cricket World Cups, Pro Kabaddi, the Hockey League, Pro Badminton, Wimbledon, and a whole host of others. So it's been a fun ride. It's been a nice transition. Can't say it was seamless, but I think I found what I should have been searching for in the first place. And it's been a fun few years here with Star as well.
For me, Dan, I'm a former hockey player. Well, I still do play, but a former junior international hockey player. Never made it to the top level. Got into sports commentary. Met Suhail out in India in 2014 when we were working on football and then hockey together. I've worked on Olympics. I've worked on Paralympics, but I've been working in India since 2014 and done various sports out there, including we both recently did badminton together. And I think it was 2016, I sort of suggested to Suhail maybe we should look at starting what we believe was the world's first Kabaddi podcast, In and Out Kabaddi. And it literally, the concept behind it was essentially two mates just talking about it and having a bit of fun. But from the premise being an insider being Suhail and an outsider being me, and essentially he would teach me the sport as it went. And 4 years later,
you've learned nothing.
We're still going strong. I've learned nothing. I still get all the predictions wrong, which is really quite an amazing achievement.
But we've had fun.
But we've had a laugh. Yeah.
And I'm sure many of our listeners will be very jealous, as it seems like you two have many sports fans. Perfect job. And one other thing, from my research, I do believe that you are the only Pro Kabaddi podcast out there. I haven't been able to find any others. So on that, because many people won't be aware, maybe in nations outside of India, what Kabaddi is, could you just give us a brief overview of the sports, the basic rules, maybe, and a little bit of history, please?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the history is debated across even India, because I think everyone wants a piece of the pie today and everyone sort of wants to claim the foundation of it. But there's a couple of places where they seem to have originated. One seems to be Maharashtra. The other is Tamil Nadu. The word Kai Pidi in Tamil, which is the language spoken in Chennai in the south, means holding hands. And when you watch Kabaddi, you'll see a lot of the players holding hands, and that's sort of part of the structure in terms of defense and how they defend as well. So the name itself seems to have originated from there. There's different versions of it going back, tracing it back in Andhra Pradesh. It was called Hututu, and that's what they used to say while they played it. But essentially, Kabaddi has moved from the mud to what it is today on the mat. And I think traditional Kabaddi is still played on the mud. When you go to the villages in India, you still see people training on the mud itself. It's the perfect foundation. It's a softer landing, and it actually gives them the grip that they want off the surface. But there's also a rootedness to the soil, and I think that holds a lot of good still within the sport. You see the humility, the connection between the earth and the players, and it's still a very big part of the sport, the connection to nature and the earth itself. So Kabaddi essentially is a game of tag. I would say a game of tag on steroids, because it is really, really fast-paced. It's athletic. It's really fit men and women who play it. There's men's Kabaddi and women's Kabaddi. It's played at the Asian Games. It's moving towards the Olympics as well. And essentially it is two teams, seven aside on either half of a court. One half of the court remains active at one time. And a raider who is an attacker comes into the opposition half, looks to tag as many people as he can or she can and head back into his own half. The objective is to tag as many people. And obviously for the defensive setup, it's to try and stop the raider or the attacker on his way back to the midline. And that's the basic outlay of what the game brings. It's easier said than done. And I think defensively, when you've got 7-on-1, it is a tough ask. But at the same time, you've got some incredible athletes who are able to jump over men, dive under chains, and you know, the techniques of tackling come into play. But also, the strategy side of it is not to be underrated, because it's so much to do with the mind as it is with the body, even though it looks to the naked eye like a game of brute force.
And you mentioned the Asian Games. The other, of course, claim which has been thrown around at times is Iran. Iran have sort of thrown in, and it's a bit of a sore point, isn't it, that they sort of lay claim to a game which is really Indian. You know, it's a game that India claim as their own, and Iran have not only won the Asian Games gold medal in 2018, but they've also sort of gone, hang on a sec, we think we own this game as well, or we think we created it as well. It's like a lot of things in sporting history. Okay, it's a lovely sort of nuanced story, and really it's a nuanced game. You said it's a brutal game of, what do you say, tag on steroids. It's brutal tag, sort of, with, as you say, with nuances and with lots going on within it. There's especially with pro kabaddi now, and Sahel, I think you'll agree, there's so many aspects added into it from the original game. I mean, I got inspired by watching kabaddi back in the 1990s. It was on Channel 4 in the UK, and it was literally dust bowl in the dirt kabaddi. It's like nothing I'd ever seen, but it's changed massively since then.
Yeah, I think when you speak to people in the UK, they sort of bring the resemblance back to British Bulldog. You know, I think a lot of people in the UK have played British Bulldog, and it's sort of similar in some senses. And look, it's 40 minutes end-to-end, non-stop entertainment. You know, every 30 seconds has a high point. And for me, that's what makes it so magical. I mean, I don't think I would have been sitting here, you know, thinking 5 or 10 years ago that I would be a kabaddi commentator and kabaddi analyst. But, you know, here I am. Former professional sportsman having turned into a kabaddi analyst. And I've got to say, I've loved it. And the minute I did game one back in 2014, where we had only a YouTube clipping of the Asian Games, I think back in 1990, to go off, and I watched it, I think, 35, 40 times. But that day when pro kabaddi just originated and we changed the way the sport existed, I mean, it's just been incredible to be a part of the growth of the sport, or the revolution of the sport.
And I think one of the most unique elements of the sport is the single breath for the raider. Could you just talk about that a little bit, please?
The cant.
Yeah, the cant of kabaddi. So it is, I think, so there's two elements to it, right? It's the only sport in the world where speaking while playing a sport is mandatory. And essentially, to explain why the cant of kabaddi, as we call it, which is just kabaddi, 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 kabaddi on one breath, has to be said, it was earlier today in pro kabaddi, we've got a 30-second raid clock. So every raid or attack lasts for 30 seconds. Traditionally, though, it lasted as long as your breath would last. So it could be someone with a lung capacity to hold it for a minute and a half. Someone else could come in and have just a 20-second raid. But it was, again, it was a connection to sort of the earthiness of the sport, where it was your breath that, you know, held good for as long as you could. You know, and I think that's the essence of the sport. It still holds today, although you'll see a lot of players sort of cheating it in some capacity, and I think it's easier to do for 30 seconds, but you get winded. You get absolutely winded, and you've got to still say it as you get knocked to the ground, you know. So there are raiders, even in today's day and age, that get called for breaking the cant of kabaddi. So it's still a very, very core, essential part of the history of the sport.
Surely deceptions with it have been part of the history as well, because, you know, when it wasn't the lights, the cameras, the action, you know, if you could sneak a breath in as you got tackled and carry on saying kabaddi, 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 and somehow get back over, you know, that's all part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, today you're mic'd up, you've got tech, yeah. You've got 14 cameras on you, and there's no escape, you know. But yeah, I'm sure the honesty and the earnest players, even of yesteryear, had a few dodges in their time as well.
But it must be quite a skill, not just holding a single breath as long as possible, but you're also running around dodging people while doing that. And as we know, exercise is all about breath. So it must take some considerable training.
To put it into British terms, if, you know, this is a podcast that sort of originates from Britain, but to put it into British terms, if you thought of a rugby pack, so 8 players, I know we've got 7 in kabaddi, but stood in front of you and you've got to keep an eye on all 8 of them, knowing any of them can tackle you at any moment, but you've got to keep saying something as well whilst watching where they are. it's making your brain do so many different things. Okay, so imagine having, and the thing is, flankers in rugby, I would always compare to a lot of the kabaddi players, a lot of defenders in kabaddi, because they're relatively stocky. They are absolutely stacked, and they will tackle anything.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at the defenders in kabaddi, I mean, you'll see various structures. I think, Dan, you bring me to a point of the body types you see in the sport. You know, people think of kabaddi and they think, oh, massive guys who are just built and properly stocked and, you know, just low center of gravity. But actually, you see three different body types. You see the raiders who are athletic. They can be tall or lean in frame and sort of use guile or power to break through, who are the attackers. Then you've got two sets of defenders, the cover defenders who are sort of the middle guys who are more stocky and they sort of block, so they've got to have a lower center of gravity. But then you've got the corners who are sort of leaner and they look for holds like an ankle hold, which is sort of a typical move of the corners. And they've got to be agile and quick. So you see various body types within the sport. So it's not just sort of brute force and strength, and it actually doesn't work. I would tell you that even Shaquille O'Neal or LeBron James would struggle to get past a chain tackle because it's a technique that is used by, it could be two really scrawny, wiry defenders who would bring down a beast of a man just from pure technique. And I think that's where it's not just about the brutal strength, but it's about strategy and the ability to bring technique into it.
And I think most global sports fans will be aware that cricket is the national passion of India. Where does kabaddi sit in significance?
So this is where things get interesting because let's remember kabaddi is India's indigenous sport, right? It's India's very own sport. And I think that's where it initially tugged on the heartstrings of most people. Now, I always like to bring to the attention of people why I think kabaddi is special in stadiums. When you turn up, and Dan will vouch for this as well. When you turn up at a stadium, you see today three or four generations of people in the stands. You see a large number of women as well who come in to watch the sport. But the reason I say you get three generations is because our grandparents used to play this sport, right? So for them, it's going back to their roots and going back to something that's familiar to them. Now, today, the kids find it cool again, right? So the kids are now brought to the stadium. And the parents, therefore, by default, have to come in because they're like, oh, hang on. You know, even if I didn't quite play it, for me now, I'm interested because my kid's watching it. My parents obviously played it. I'm excited about it as well. And it becomes a whole family affair. So to put numbers into perspective, the IPL garners about, I would say, I think 750 million viewers on television. Kabaddi, over, I think, the first or second season itself, had 430 million viewers at one point. So it is very strongly today India's second sport. And I think it's a testament to how quickly it's grown, but also how nicely it's been packaged by everyone at Star Sports, who's changed the rules of the game, changed the way it's packaged and presented to fans across the country.
It's also with that, it's no small thing to manage that. I mean, there are other sports competing to be sort of just below cricket. There are sports, I mean, they've started football up, hockey, you know, loads of different sports, loads of different leagues all want to be sort of get a bigger piece of the pie as they can. And kabaddi's managed it. And one of the reasons is, sort of as Sahel will tell you, is it's a very rural sport. So there are a lot of people out there interested who have played it as kids. But also, as you said, Sahel, going to the stadiums, not just for kabaddi, for any sport in India, it's kind of it's a real social event almost. There's so much around it that isn't just about the sport. It's kind of the whole atmosphere and the just meeting with your friends and going with your family, as you said.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I mean, I'll put it in perspective, right? I mean, I've been working, I co-founded a startup called Kabaddi Adda just over a year ago, and I've sort of been with them for a bit now. And in about 9 or 10 months, with no marketing, with only word of mouth and just, you know, pure sort of content, we've got about 250,000, 260,000 subscribers just on YouTube, right? It just shows you that the appetite for kabaddi is constant. And look, as Dan said, you've got so many sports fighting to get a piece of the pie. Let's be honest, you're always fighting for second spot. Cricket is always going to be top of the pile, and I think that's not going to change for in my lifetime, maybe. But I think if you even get second spot, remember, it's a country of 1.2 billion people. So that second spot and that piece of the pie is massive.
So you'd almost consider it the world's most known, least known sport kind of thing, with the most followers, but outside of the diehard or the followers in India, it's relatively unknown still.
I think you'd be amazed, though, how much people talk about it around the world. And an example I'll give you is my local hockey club. They play kabaddi as part of their warm-up because it gets sort of all of you moving. And it's something a bit fun and a bit different and a bit, as we said earlier, a bit nuanced, something you wouldn't normally do. But also something that you, even in a basic form, you can grab and understand. Because, you know, we all play tag at school. If you suddenly throw in tag, but you've got to get the guy on the floor, you know, everyone's like, wicked, that sounds fun. And they can kind of just comprehend it, understand it, and off you go. So I agree, it is sort of the biggest unknown sport, but also people are starting to talk about it away from India and around the world and sort of really get to grips with that.
You know what was really cool for me, guys, was that the England football team at the World Cup, the last World Cup, was actually using kabaddi as a warm-up drill. Harry Kane and the boys were out there playing kabaddi, and that was pretty cool to see. I mean, it was a great advert for the sport, but as Dan said, it's just a great sport to get the limbs going. You know, when you play it without the contact and you just play with a light touch, you know, it just gets you going. But at the same time, you know, we had a kabaddi World Cup, and we've seen countries like Poland, Kenya, South Korea, Japan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, obviously still many Asian countries. But I mean, countries like Poland and Kenya have taken to it massively. And I think that's, you know, it is going to grow. And I think as you see the sport growing in terms of athleticism, it's only going to get bigger and bigger. But I think when you look at the way the sport is actually structured, it's not hard for a country to take to it, because I would think of, you know, I spent 4 or 5 years in Australia. And I think when you look at the AFL players, the body structure is probably perfect for kabaddi. So, you know, I would take the AFL boys from, say, Aussie Rules football and say, hang on, guys, you guys are the perfect blueprint to be kabaddi players. Just send a coach out there, which is what India is doing at the moment, sending coaches out to these countries and training players from there and creating new kabaddi countries.
So you've mentioned the Pro Kabaddi League a couple of times, and I think it's probably no coincidence that the growth in the sport has coincided with the introduction of the PKL. Can you just tell us a little bit about that and what it is, please?
So the PKL originated in 2014. It was a revival for the sport. I remember the couple of months leading up to the PKL, you know, I had just joined Star Sports at the time, and I was working on something else. And actually that show had just gotten taken off air because India was touring England and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, what am I doing with my life? Here comes the PKL. And I remember the murmurs around the office at the time and around the studios, and everyone goes, what do you mean a Pro Kabaddi League? Or what's next? You know, random Coco, or what are we going to do next? You know, what are we going to invent next? And who's going to watch this? And that was sort of the murmur going around. But the people behind the league were all solid businessmen, sports fanatics, really established people in their own right, industry leaders. And suddenly there was a seriousness about it when I would say T-2. I remember getting to the dome at the NSCI in Mumbai, and 2 days before we got going, and I came on board only 6 days before the league started, but 2 days before it all kicked off, I just saw the lights come on for the first time in our dry runs, in our rehearsals, and I thought, holy crap, we're onto something here. And I'll never forget that first day when the lights came on, you know, when no one knew what to expect, and suddenly we had Shah Rukh Khan, Amitabh Bachchan, Abhishek Bachchan, Aamir Khan, Ronnie Sruvala, you know, Sachin Tendulkar, and everyone else packing the stadium, but actually enthralled. I mean, the look on their face, you couldn't manufacture it, right? There was a look of shock, awe, and just completely being enthralled in the sport. And when you saw that on night number one, we all turned to each other. And I remember finishing commentary that day going, my God, that was fun. And literally that just turned the entire sport on its head. And look, I mean, for me, my wife's pretty much an example of it. She came in, she watched that first day of kabaddi, doesn't watch too much sport. And it's just, it's still the only sport for her that she really follows, because it's just easy to follow. It's high impact and it's a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
To just back up Sahel's point as well, knowing what sport is like in India and how production is like in India and how sort of it because it's such a melting pot and it's so fast paced, it has to be like this. But when he said he came in at sort of T-2, that will have been carnage, right? You will have been walking around the NSCI dome in Mumbai and there will have been workmen everywhere. It will have been carnage. They'll have been putting everything together. that you will never have seen as many people working in one area in your life, right?
A lot of wooden planks.
So then you're going, right, okay, how's this going to look? Then the lights come up and you go, wow, it works, as Sahil said. And I've seen this on so many sports like that in India, where you sort of 2 days out, you're going, this can't make sense when we kick off or when the sport starts, when the whistle goes. And the lights go up and it's just like, I think I've seen it once where a stadium just looked pristine when I arrived. And that was 4 days before a tournament. So going into that as a brand new sport or a brand new league, because it was a sort of complete remoulding of a sport, is quite a scary thing to do, but also unbelievable, as you said, when it starts. The other thing I think they've got really right with PKL at the moment is the spread of teams. So they've got 12 teams and they're really dotted nicely around India, which means quite often with a lot of Indian sport, it's quite clustered. Whereas here, they've actually got a spread to allow everyone to get involved in the league and everyone to have a buy-in and everyone to sort of have their own team, which I think helps.
I think one thing I will just say also, Mark, is just that when you came into that first day, no one knew what to expect, because when you thought of Kabaddi, you thought of the mud, you thought of rural India, and you thought of lines being drawn with chalk powder, and you know, this was the traditional thought. Suddenly, when it lit up on your TV screen, you saw NBA-style graphics, you saw augmented reality, you saw players charging into to theme music, you saw mascots, and you know, suddenly it was the sport thrown into light in a completely different way, right? And in a non-traditional, new age, completely high impact version. And I think that just blew people's minds. And that for me was where it just lifted.
So Dan, you mentioned that there are 12 teams spread around the country. How is the season structured?
Well, till last year, or the year before the one just gone, PKL 6, they were using, they had started using a zonal structure, so zonal systems. So what they've done now is they've gone to each team play each other twice through the season. Top two go into the semi-finals, and then the four below that play in an eliminator to make the semi-finals. So they follow a caravan format around India, okay? And each team ends up playing each other twice through the season, culminating in essentially a grand final at the end of the season.
So it started off basically, Mark, with 8 teams, and it's now built up to 12 over the last few seasons. And so I guess the structure has changed a bit. By going to 12 teams, it's actually today India's largest sporting league. It's the only sporting league with 12 teams. It's a sizable league and also successful. It is a 3-month-long league as well, so it's not short. But it takes that long, I guess, to go through the league season and to build into the finals. By the end of it, I mean, it's 22 games that each team plays. And there are, you know, squads that you've got to, I guess, build around knowing that, right? Because it's a 3-month-long season. When you have an injury, you've got to cater for that. And so you've got a squad which can go up to 25 players, but it's a minimum of 18. And you've got 12 sitting on the court, 7 on the court and 5 in the subs bench.
So how many cities will the caravan visit, or venues?
Go on, Sahil. Come on.
This is testing me. Hang on. So let me bring you the cities that we do go to, right? So you go to Calcutta, which is the home of the Bengal Warriors. We go to Bangalore, which is the home of the Bengaluru Bulls. Delhi, the home of Dabang Delhi KC. Gujarat, so we go to Ahmedabad, which is the home of the Gujarat Fortune Giants. We go to Haryana.
World Cup in 2016.
Yeah, also. We go to Haryana, which is one of the hotbeds of Indian sport, and that's the home of the Haryana Steelers. We go to Jaipur, which is the home of the Jaipur Pink Panthers, Dan's favorite team. And
Best team in the league. Best team in the league.
And owned by Abhishek Bachchan. We used to go to Patna. We haven't been there in a few seasons, the home of the 3-time champions, the Patna Pirates. We also go to Pune, which is one of the real hotbeds of Kabaddi, and that's the home of the Puneri Paltan. We go down to Chennai, which is where I'm from, and it's the home of the Tamil Talaivas. And that's in Madras, or Chennai, as it's now called.
Sahil is never biased towards Chennai either. He'll never mutter a good thing about the place. He's not a fan at all.
Absolutely, Dan. Sure. Let's just keep telling us about that. Then we go to either Hyderabad or Vizag, which is the home of the Telugu Titans. Also, I guess, a real hotbed for Kabaddi and very, very popular in the region. Then Mumbai, the home of U Mumbai, champions of season two, that was 2015. And then UP Yodha, which is in Uttar Pradesh. So that's one of the new sides as well. So four new teams, eight traditional structures, but it is a proper caravan, and it really travels the length and breadth of the country. So it makes you understand also different cultures and the way they come into stadiums and what their appetite is, because some of these are traditional kabaddi playing parts of the country, but some of them, like Bengal, home of Calcutta, the Kolkata side, they're not really kabaddi traditional cities, you know. So it's always nice to go to even these cities and see what the response is like.
And each stop of the caravan, will each team play one match?
Well, the home team plays more than one. The home team plays several games in their home leg. So they play four in their home leg. And that actually becomes very, very crucial, because if you've got your home leg when you're in sort of in form or in good flow, it's perfect. But when you come into your home leg with maybe your first or second star injured, then it's a shocker. And you go away from your home leg absolutely battered and bruised, with your morale down as well. So that home leg becomes so vital.
It always affects our podcast. It's always really interesting because of the caravan format. Each episode of the podcast sort of sways towards a team because there's loads more action for the home team. And it's always fascinating. There was a time last season where the home teams were doing not very well. So it was really funny because you've got all this sort of information about the home team, but you almost feel like, I think we had like 2 weeks where teams barely won a game on home soil. So it really does affect how our podcast works and what content we've got to look at and what talking points there are. Because also you don't want to just be sounding negative, going, oh, you know, this team, they've lost again at home and blah, 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 blah. You've got to kind of find positive spins. But because of how it's formatted, it sways what content's coming through.
So it sounds like there are a lot of people that can get to these games. And by the sounds of it, I'm assuming the caravan stops are over more than one day, so people can come on different days and see different teams play.
Yes, the caravan is essentially on for 6 days. You know, and I think that's the beauty of it. You've got one rest day in between, but it runs for 6 days of the week. So it's fantastic for fans to come in, and you know, it's sort of like a festival and like a carnival in your city and at the stadium, where a hardcore fan will be there every night, night after night. I mean, I've seen the same fans, painted faces and painted bodies, coming in there with their flags and slogans and you know, chants for their favorite stars. So it really just converts that city into like a kabaddi carnival for 6 days, and it is a fabulous atmosphere.
Most of the ones painted up are the Sahel Chanduk fan group, aren't they?
Sure, let's sell ourselves that. Why not?
The big stars.
I'm already seeing why this sport is starting to catch on anyway, by the sounds of it. So how do the teams come about? I understand it's not like maybe soccer where you buy players and they are contracted to you for a number of years. This is more of an IPL format, is it not?
Which is the same really throughout Indian sport. It's all auction based. It's franchises and auction based.
Just to give you perspective, I mean, let's just take it back, right? Let's go back to season one of the auction. The top player went for Rakesh Kumar at the time, went for 12 lakh rupees, which is essentially 120,000 rupees, which is 12,000 pounds, right? That was season one, top-notch billing. Right, cut to now 6 seasons on, and the top player is making 1.5 crore rupees, which is 160,000 pounds, right? That's just per season. That's a 13x increase in player wages in just 6 years. I mean, it is incredible. It's changed the social fabric of it. But going back to the structure, it started in the auction basis. I mean, there were 8 team owners that came on initially, and it was a straight-up auction structure. I think, as Dan said, most Indian sports follow an auction. I think it's only football today that also works on free trade in the Indian Super League, but mostly it's run on an auction. Kabaddi has a salary cap, which each team this year or last auction had at 4 crore rupees, which is for all the players combined. So, like we said, the top player went for, I think, just over a crore and a half, or that was a season before that. But 4 crores is your purse in total. IPL is a massive purse because, I mean, for instance, MS Dhoni goes for 15 or 17 crore rupees on his own, to give you some perspective. So it's still a long way off. But again, bringing perspective into things, because these Kabaddi players, let's be honest, used to play for pride. They played to get a government job. They played to get basic salaries from a job working with the railways or working with a company that funded Kabaddi players and, you know, those who went to the Asian Games. And like I said, for them, even getting that 12 lakh sum of rupees, which is 120,000 rupees back in 2014, was a huge deal. Today, to be able to earn 160,000 pounds per season for the top player, or, you know, say there's four players just over 100,000 pounds, I mean, four to five players, that's mad, you know, and that's changed not just their livelihoods, but the entire social and economic structure of their villages, their rural areas, their families, their next generations. It has changed the social fabric of that entire part of the country, and therefore there's more aspiring young Kabaddi players coming through.
I remember, Sahel, you telling me about 2014, where players were literally finding it almost bizarre to be staying in hotels. They were staying in like five-star hotels, and it was this sort of societal shock for them almost of what is this place I'm in? Because, you know, the IPL players in real terms, although their economic power has changed dramatically in our lifetime in terms of what cricketers can earn, cricket's always had money in real terms. Cricket's always been a relatively wealthy sport. Kabaddi, if that's true, what you said, and I have no reason to doubt it's not, unbelievable that you would see guys literally going, what's this five-star hotel? I've never stayed in one of these before.
Yeah, let me just go back to the hotels that Dan was speaking of. I remember in season one when we got to, I think one of the first hotels, I think it was in Vizag, in the home of the Telugu Titans. I remember getting down to reception and suddenly there was a horde of players just standing at reception. And I was wondering what the hell was going on. And I went up to one of the players and said, boys, what's happening? Are you guys okay? He said, no, sir. And you know, that's the level of respect for anyone at that point. He said, no, sir, you know, for us, we've not stayed at a hotel before and we don't like the hotel beds and we don't like the air conditioning. So we're trying to tell them to remove the beds from our hotel room so we can sleep on the floor and also turn the ACs off. And, you know, that was the structure back then. They'd never seen the inside of a hotel, never been on a flight. You know, it was for them bizarre to be in these circumstances. But again, move forward to 2020, and these are guys driving around in BMWs who are, you know, now staying in the top hotels across the country, who are signing autographs at airports, taking a flight almost every second day at times. And you know, they are part and parcel of India's sports fanatics. So, you know, it's incredible how much some of their lives have changed in a span of a couple of years, or for some, even just over a year and one good performance. But, you know, there are guys whose parents are rickshaw drivers or farmers or, you know, load workers or laborers. And it's still, when you look at them and you sort of go back to their roots, they are still rooted to who they are. And I think that's the beautiful part of Kabaddi. You know, I spent some time with Pardeep Narwal, one of the top stars or the top star in the Kabaddi League, and spent some time in his town of Rindhana in Haryana. And it was beautiful because he still, you know, helps his family with the farming. He comes back home and we had a meal in his home and his mum was making him sort of rotis under the kitchen counter, and we're sitting there on the floor and, you know, having the traditional food that he's always had. And it's nice to see that they've not changed as individuals. And I think that's the beauty of these stars.
I doubt there are any other sports in the world that have had such a dramatic change in circumstances.
I agree.
So with the auction format, does that mean the squad of players you are a fan of is completely different from year to year?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And I think maybe down the line, you know, we'll start seeing trades and maybe more sort of longer term contracts. But we've said this often, haven't we, Dan? It's, you know, the only part is you can't therefore follow a team and a player, because cut to the next season. I mean, there are today retentions that are allowed and you can keep a couple of A category, a couple of B category, C and D. So there's still, you can still keep your core intact, but you do see a lot of shuffling back and forth, which for fans sometimes isn't ideal, but they've tried to do away with that season after season.
It is, they do have some retained players, which does allow you to sort of build up a following a bit. But yeah, like you say, if you're a football fan and your favourite player is always at the same club, which changes now a bit, you know, but it does affect, you know, if suddenly your favourite player's gone and, you know, gone to your best mate's franchise, it kind of changes the arguments a bit.
Yeah, and that's where the cities come into play here as well massively, because if you're a lad from say Chennai or Bombay a particular part of the country, you want to show your passion and your sort of affection for your home side. But if your favorite player moves across to a rival city, say moves from Chennai to Bangalore, suddenly you're going, oh, hang on, I love him, but I cannot possibly support the Bengaluru Bulls. So what do I do now? But again, that's the exciting part of it as well.
I'll give you an example. There's an older player. He's retired now. His name is Jasveer Singh. He was at Jaipur Pink Panthers. We might have mentioned my team. Got a shirt and everything. I should have worn it today, but I didn't. Moved to Tamil Tulivas. Well, that's it. Me and Jasveer, no longer my favourite player at that point, because he's gone to Tamil Tulivas and he's no longer at JPP. So you're right. It does. I wouldn't say there's quite the sort of animosity to players moving because of the way the auctions go that there is in football, because everyone knows that essentially they're fair game. They're just on a contract for a short time, or it's not, as long as they're retained or not. But it's just a different structure to the league and a different way of doing things within sport, I suppose, the difference in the business structure.
And so moving on to teams, Dan, give us your pitch. Why are the Pink Panthers the best team in all of Kabaddi?
There is one thing within their name that makes them the best team, and that is purely that the joke was always, I support them because they wear pink. Then Sahel kind
is
of...
Is that how you buy your cars as well, Dan?
Yeah, only pink. Yeah. Then Sahel really kindly, and I honestly thought this was really kind, bought me a JPP shirt, sent it to me, and it is the brightest pink you have ever seen. So I tend to go running in my JPP shirt, which has my name on the back. I didn't do that myself. Sahel decided to get it printed for me.
The team that were kind enough to do it for you. I didn't have to buy it because the team were actually good enough
Why did I support them? At the time, they were doing quite well when we started the podcast.
At the time,
they haven't done quite so well since. It kind of, to be fair, when Jasveer left, they went downhill. But at the time, they were doing quite well. I think I met the owner when we were doing football, so I kind of had, I don't know him, but I had an affinity because I knew who he was and stuff like that. And they wore pink, and that was quite a big reason, in all honesty. And it does add a little bit of spice between me and Sahel, because he'll never tell you who he really supports, but it's someone between Tamil Tulivas and Umumba. And Umumba and JPP tend to have quite a big rivalry, so it adds a little bit of spice to the podcast.
I must admit, having watched a limited amount of PKL myself, the Pink Panthers certainly have the most eye-catching of all the kits. They're hard to forget. So, Suhail, can you just give us a pitch for the two teams there that you won't admit to supporting, please?
Well, actually, it's a little different. I don't actually have a massive affinity for just those two teams. There's a couple of ones outside of that. I'll be a little bit careful with my diplomacy.
He sits on the fence a lot.
I will be a little diplomatic on this one, but... Look, I actually tend to support a few players as well because I've got to know them really well. And I think what they bring to the table for me is really, really nice. And I guess as you've sort of grown with the sport, you've seen different teams evolve in different ways. And you start to have different appreciation for each team. Umumba is a team that, as Dan said, is something that I've sort of seen grow from close quarters as well. And therefore, watched them in the first couple of seasons. And for me, the reason I actually started liking them a lot was because of their leader at the time, Anup Kumar. I think he brought a lot to the game and to the table. And he was sort of the MS Dhoni of Kabaddi, right? He formed a different imprint of Kabaddi. He sort of showed people that Kabaddi was not physical, but it could be mental and strategic as well. And for me, that gained a lot of respect. And for me, that was one of the reasons I started to appreciate his style of Kabaddi. But from the Patna Pirates as well, for me, it's Pardeep Narwal, who I've gotten to know personally as well. And as a human being, I think he brings a lot to the table. The earnest way of reinventing himself season after season for me has been quite amazing. And so, I follow the Patna Pirates around quite closely with him there. And the Tamil Tulivas, I think for me, because I'm from Chennai, the team hasn't done very well, unfortunately. So I can't say there's been too much to support. But look, I like to see their vision of growing home heroes. And there was a young lad last season named Ajit Kumar. And honestly, Mark, if you see where this youngster is from, you can't not support that team. I mean, his dad is a porter at the railway station. He carries bags for people. And, his mother works at home. And Look, he comes from very, very humble beginnings, but to see this young man, you know, not being overshadowed by the spotlight, by the big stars, turn up, enjoy himself and try and change the way this team works. For me, that was it is what captures the essence of Kabaddi, right? And it's heartwarming stories like that, human stories for me that draw me into certain personalities and certain teams, I guess.
With that as well, just talking generically about our job, I think that is the crux of how our job works. If you're good at your job, you build friendships with people within the sports you work, Kabaddi or not, whatever sport you're working on. If you're good at interviewing people, you put them at their ease and you let them sort of talk to you because they want to talk to you, not because they feel forced and sort of harassed to answer questions. And I think then you're never biased, because you can't be, because it's your job not to be, but you will always build those relationships with people and those friendships, and you want them to do well. You might sort of go into professional mode when you're on air, but you might see them on the mat afterwards or in the car park afterwards and say hello. And it's nice to see them doing well, because like you say, you've seen them build up through their career as your career is built as well.
If a visitor wanted to go and see some Kabaddi for the first time, what can they expect from the experience?
Dan, maybe you should come in on this, because I will bring in my view after. But Dan, yeah. I'd love to know actually from you, because you've seen a few games, and it what struck you first up?
The razzmatazz. It's and again, this kind of is slightly a generic Indian sport thing. Is you get I would say you get more. It's a different culture of sport in India, and so your game day experience is different. It's very in your face. It's very loud. There's just some people will sit still and watch the whole game. And again, I'm talking across sports here. Some people will be just constantly moving. There'll be drums, which are, and me and Sahel know this from first-hand experience, at times absolutely deafening. Try commentating for 6 hours a day, if I'm talking badminton here, where this happened, where they are literally just drumming and drumming and drumming and drumming. And I'm sure cricket is probably 10 times worse as well. Just the sort of the explosion of on the senses, really. It's about the food in the stadium. It's about what's going on the pitch, on the court. It's about the music. It's about everything around. Sort of, it's a real microcosm of what you then go and see on the street, just bought in and sort of plonked into an arena, because that is how Indian sport is. It's almost a celebration of whichever sport it is at the time. It's a different way of doing sport than you'll see in the UK or you'll see in America. It's probably a little more like America because it has the showbiz aspect built more in, which Britain is starting to do more, but not as it's never done quite as much as places like India or the USA.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get the Lord's slow clap on Kabaddi, that's for sure. I mean, I can be honest with you. But for me, it's the atmosphere and the diversity. I think these are the two words that I would use to really explain just what you're getting out of it. You know, A, the atmosphere, it's like nothing else I've seen, because it's closed stadiums. And you could go to a stadium like you have in Patna, which is all of 2,000 people or 2,500 people, but it feels like there's 15,000. Right, it's just the stadium is reverberating. The players are out there with end-to-end. And that's, for me, what it is, right? Every 30 seconds, you've got a potential high point. And you don't see too many sports, I think it's maybe barring the NBA, which has end-to-end action as this does. And every 30 seconds, you've got a massive pow, you know, bonanza sort of moment. And for me, that is huge. But then you just pan your eyes across the stadium and you see diversity. As I said earlier, you've got kids who are as young as 1 year old, you know, over to 85-year-olds, 90-year-olds coming in to watch the sport that they grew up on. And then you've got people from rural India and farming communities to people living in multi-story buildings in Mumbai turning up to watch the same sport, right? And suddenly there's a leveler, because all of them are appreciative of the athleticism that's going on there, the indigenous Indian sport that is Kabaddi. And there's this heartwarming tug on traditional India that you see in a new avatar, which for me is India, right? India is no longer the India that's on the mud. India today is the high rises. India today is the noise. India today is the glamour, you know, and all of that combined is what Kabaddi is today as well. So you have the humility, the earthiness of the sport with the cant of Kabaddi, with the breathing element, But you've got, as Dan said, the razzmatazz as well, which today is India. It's the culmination of diversity all working together seamlessly.
And Dan, you mentioned that part of the experience being about the food. What's the iconic arena food in India?
So I was trying to think about this, and one of the issues I had when thinking about this is I suddenly realised I don't think I've ever eaten food in a sports stadium which isn't production food, because when we're working, we get like a production, literally catering put on, which is normally very, very good, and it's normally curries, and it's normally... So my experience of stadium food is basically going for a curry. Normally we're Sahel and we stand there and we eat roti and we sort of chew the cud. It's kind of, I would say, from what I've seen, very fast food based. So it'll be, they tend to do like nuts and stuff, don't they? And chocolate bars and crisps and soft drinks. I don't really know though, honestly.
Well, it depends on where you go, to be honest. And this is, again, the awesome part of India, right? Every state and every city in India, to someone who comes in from outside of India, functions as a different country altogether.
Yeah, totally.
It's a different language people speak. It's different food people eat. It's, you know, completely different ways of life. So you actually see that in the stadium as well. You'll hear a different language. You'll see a different typical food. I mean, you go to Patna and you get the traditional food called Litti Choka, and you get this at the stadiums as well. You come to Mumbai and you get your Mumbai chaat, which is, you know, a form of street food here, and you'll get sort of shawarma rolls and things like that. Then you head across to Delhi and you might get a kebab guy or a paratha chaps sat just outside the stadium. So it's very different when you go to each part of it, and then you'll have your nuts and your other little crisps and stuff like that. But the amazing part is, as you go to different parts of the country, you've got completely different atmospheres and different food and different languages, and that's the cool part of a sport that travels across the country.
We found it recently. We were eating out in a place called Lucknow, which is up north India.
Best food in the country.
Amazing food. And me and Sahel went for a fantastic meal, and it cost next to nothing. Only it cost me a little bit more than I thought the bill was, because I broke my tooth and had to go home and have it. Well, I had to have it filled in India in Hyderabad, and then
had to go home and have it done.
But it's all part of the experience. It's all part of it.
You paid dentistry rates in India and not in the UK. So, hey, we saved you some money there.
I paid both. I got it done in India and then done again in the UK. But it's all part of the experience. And that's, I think, what this podcast is all about as well. It's all part of the fabric of what Indian sport is. Coming home from your match, and it's not just about the match. It's about the food you had. It's about the people you spoke to. It's about the overall experience is so, so important. The only one thing I would say, eating-wise, is try and avoid having a carty roll at 6 a.m. in an airport when you've got to be on air 4 hours later. Did it once. I'll never do it again. I won't go into detail. I'll just never do it again.
Some very useful advice. And you've hit the nail on the head there as well, Dan, that's exactly what this podcast is about. It's about the experience and the culture more so than what's going on the field or the court. And by the sounds of it, it's going to be really hard to narrow this down. But for someone coming to India and wants to see Kabaddi, can you give us maybe two or three places that you would highly recommend they go and watch the sport?
Yeah, I think going to Haryana is a really good one, because it's one of the hotbeds of Kabaddi. I think Mumbai is a phenomenal experience, because I think it gives you, you're not overawed by maybe the lack of infrastructure. And so you're in a familiar setting in some sense, but also the stadium in Mumbai, the dome at the NSCI, is fantastic. I mean, it's a state-of-the-art setup. It's in the middle of the city. It's by the ocean, and the fans are incredible. You know, it really is a magical experience. Chennai is also a really good experience, because I guess, like we said earlier, the sport originated to many people right there, right? And so when you see even a team that's struggling, I mean, they were languishing at the bottom of the points table, but you still have a packed stadium. Very different culture, really different language of music that you see there, but just incredible crowds. So I would say that gives you three different perspectives. But yeah, those would be my picks, I think.
I'm going to agree. I think Mumbai, if you're going to go to one place, I think Mumbai, because you get a real sense of new and old India in totally different ways. An amazing city. I think the people are passionate. The setup's good. The dome there is a really good facility. You will also see, wherever you go in India, you'll see a different experience, because you could go to one place and, the, as you said, the infrastructure is not so great. Got to Ahmedabad and you've got an absolutely, is it the Trans-Stadium Arena?
Yeah.
It's like state of the art, absolutely stunning, with a football pitch built in right into the side of it. And all this. So you will get different styles of fan, but I think Mumbai would be your place to sort of, if you're going to go to one place, go to Mumbai to watch it.
Great, thank you. And we are rapidly running out of time, and you've both been incredibly generous in talking to me, so thank you once again. Before we wrap up, is there anything that I've missed that you feel is important to make people aware of about Kabaddi?
So I think for me, it's just giving a new sport an opportunity, right? I think a lot of people in India itself didn't think that Kabaddi would be where it is today. I would say that with complete honesty as well. I don't think I saw it being where it is today so quickly as well. But you give it a shot and it will take you in. It'll absolutely swallow you, because it's just one of those sports that you can't not get hooked onto. I mean, 40 minutes of end-to-end action. And also, there's something about it on the eye. When you understand it, I guess for me, that's the thing. When you start to understand the nuances of it, it makes you appreciate it a bit more. I mean, Mark, I mean, we're doing touchscreen stuff on Kabaddi today, right? And it's incredible to see the layering to the sport that exists today. And as you dive deeper into it, I think you understand layers of the sport that you didn't think existed. And so for me, it's just say, give it a shot, try and enjoy the razzmatazz with it, and you know, grab a drink, watch it with a bit of commentary to understand it. You might hear my voice. If you do, mute yourself, it's fine. But it's worth really just enjoying it with your mates. A simple example, I actually wanted to say this a bit earlier. I remember in season 4, I had a guy from Geneva send me a message saying, hey, every day, me and 13 of my friends, so 14 of us, head to a pub in Geneva every evening to watch highlights of the Kabaddi on Sky Sports. And for me, that was, and he said, I don't really understand what's going on, but I love it, right? And I spent an hour with him on a phone call explaining the rules of Kabaddi to him even more. And he went back to his friends, explained it a bit more. But to me, that captured the essence of it. They didn't know what the hell was going on, but it looked cool. They gave it a shot and they absolutely loved it. They turned up with a beer in hand every day to watch the highlights of this for half an hour at the same pub. And to me, that means that the sport has something special to it.
I think it's going in with an open mind would be how I would back that up 100%. That's exactly how I came into this podcast when we started In and Out, was let's have an open mind and see where this can go. And worst case, it's just me and Sahel sort of wasting some hot air for a few hours a week, you know. But that's kind of really also how it's been with Kabaddi, is it was something I knew from when I was a kid. It had been modernised. I understood at the start bits of it. You know, everyone sort of goes, oh, it's just tag. It's not just tag. It's a lot more than just tag. But to understand it fully, you kind of do need that open mind mentality, because if you're too narrow-minded on it, you'll miss a lot. Also with it, don't be narrow-minded in the sense that it is only Indian players that play it, because if you think it's just Indian players that play it, you're going to see some phenomenal players because they have so many stars. But you're going to miss your Faisal Acharchalis and your Jankan Lee, who he's gone off the ball a bit recently, but he was a star for a number of seasons. You're going to miss a lot of exceptional talent within the league if you just think it's India, 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 which is kind of what we've always tried to do with our podcast, is go, this is an Indian sport, but this is the overall view of it for everyone to see and sort of be lighthearted with it as well.
You know, I think to sum it up, I would say treat Kabaddi as you would treat India. If you come into India with a closed mind, you can hate it. And I've always said this to friends of mine that have visited India for the first time. You can either love it or hate it. You've got to go with the madness, right? I think India is one of those countries that is a hit on the senses, but it's a beautiful hit on the senses if you accept it, right? You have to accept that it's going to be different. You have to accept the madness that comes with it. But you get a lot of beauty, you get a lot of internalization, you get a lot of earthiness, and you get a connect. And that connect for me can be extremely deep if you give it an opportunity, which is for me the same with Kabaddi. So I would say treat Kabaddi as you treat Kabaddi's own country, which is India. And I think that's how I would sum it up.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you. And before we go, can you just remind everybody where they can find you and In and Out Kabaddi Online, please? Dan, we'll start with you.
Yeah, we're on Twitter, which is at In and Out Kabaddi, In and Out Kabaddi. We are on Apple iTunes, Audio Boom as well. You can get the podcast on there. Literally type In and Out Kabaddi. My Twitter and my Instagram is at Dan Strange TV. And Sahail's is...
Yeah, you can find me at Suhail Chandok on Instagram or on Twitter as well. And I'd love to hear from you guys on not just your thoughts on this podcast, but life in general and sport in general. And Mark, thanks so much for having us as well.
Yeah, thank you. It's been really good fun.
Well, thank you both. This has been utterly fascinating and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And as I say, really, really appreciate it. So thanks a lot.
Cheers. Thank you.
And that's going to do it for this episode. I do hope you found it enjoyable and that you will join me next time. But until then, goodbye.